Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
A binge-worthy show about Jesus? The Chosen Season 3 is here. Come and see what the buzz is about. The Chosen explores the imperfect and messy relationships of real humans following Jesus. The first 6 episodes are available now. Stream each new episode for free. Plus, watch exclusive content like The After Show, only in the new Chosen app. Download the Chosen app on mobile and TV streaming devices. Visit BingeJesus.com to learn more.
Want to create a breakthrough gene therapy? Pioneer aerospace excellence? Start a global hospitality brand? Be next to do it in Montgomery County, Maryland. Visit BeNext.ThinkMOCO.com to see how our top talent, diversity, and location will help you be the next company to change the world.
Welcome to the Fantrax Toolshed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From dynasty to prospects to redraft, we got you covered. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clay.
All right, fantasy baseball fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 77 of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clayton Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We're taking a quick break from our ranking series to discuss some risers and fallers from our recent Dynasty rankings updates that we both put out over the last week or so. And with me, as usual, my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's going on, man?
You always pump me up with that. 80 grade. That makes me feel good.
you earned it, man. You're an 80 grade friend, 80 grade co-host, 80 grade analyst, all of the above.
Appreciate that. But yeah, it's going to be a good episode. I'm really looking forward to this. We both just put out recent dynasty updates. So we're going to kind of be discussing players that have moved up and down our rankings. Obviously our ranking sets are different, average and OBP, but regardless, you know, it'd be good to discuss. And I think we'll have some good conversation tonight.
For sure. Yeah, we have a lot. There's a lot of good movers in my last update. You know, a lot of prospects moving up and down. We won't talk too many prospects in here. We'll focus more on the major league side, but a lot of good risers and fallers there as well. But before we get into all that, the usual housekeeping here, you can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. And our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. If you enjoy our podcast, please rate and review. Check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FantraxToolshed for extra content from both of us. And of course, check out all the other great written and audio work we have on the Fantrax HQ network, including our other podcasts, SB Streamer, Fantasy Hockey Life, Fantasy Football Addicts, Define Fantasy Football, and Fantasy Football POV. But fantasy football is coming to an end. We're full on in fantasy baseball mode here. Both obviously Dynasty is always in full on mode, but read a lot of more redraft talk, a lot more draft talk, and our draft kit's going at fantraxhq.com. Check that out. A lot of fun stuff. So it feels good to be talking. No, we've never stopped here, Chris, obviously.
Right.
But it feels good to see like my timeline, you know, more baseball than it was, you know, a few weeks ago. And hopefully the lockout doesn't screw that up. I'm starting to get a little worried. I'm not going to lie, but I'm trying to remain positive that, all right, we're going to have opening day on time. Everything's going to be fine, but we'll see. But we're not here to talk about that today. We're here to talk some Dynasty risers and followers. Let's keep it positive. Keep it fun here. Let's start out though with a guy that's not technically a riser or follower, but someone that we are adding into our rankings now, even though he hasn't technically signed yet, but all indications are that he will once the lockout ends. And that's Saya Suzuki, the standout outfielder from Japan, who's, you know, I wrote in my redraft hitters, top prospects for redraft article that came out yesterday. It just did hitters yesterday. They'll pitch us next week. But I kind of said that he was maybe the best hitting, you know, guy I've seen come out of Japan since what, like, I can't think of anybody since like Ichiro and Matsui, like back in like, you know, early to mid 2000s that can compare. Like all the other ones really haven't panned out. So this is one of the best hitters we've seen come out of Japan in recent memory. And he's still very young. He's still 27 years old. Great profile. Where are you popping him in your rankings, Chris? For me, I kind of looked at, I didn't think of a number. Like I was looking like, all right, where do I have certain guys that I think I value similarly to him? And I ended up putting him at 155 overall. And that's near guys like Lourdes Gurriel and who else do I have in that range here? Josh Lowe, Alec Thomas, Tristan Cassis, out right behind Alex Verdugo for outfielders, and Corbin Carroll and Zach Veen. So I thought that was a pretty good spot for him. Well, where do you have him in your rankings?
I have no clue where to slot him, to be honest.
It was hard, yeah.
Because last year I feel like I went way too high on Ha-Seong Kim, and that really busted. Not to say that's going to happen with Suzuki. I think they're different profiles, but I do think that maybe the hype is a little too much on Suzuki. I personally don't think he's going to steal at all. He's not going to steal any bases here. I mean, his success rate was not great there, and you go against really good catchers in the major league. I see him as probably like a 275 type hitter that hits maybe 20, 25 home runs. So yeah. Trying to figure out where that comps in. I think he chips in maybe 5 steals. So you're right. I think that's like Lourdes Gurriel type player. So that's probably a fair range. I have Lourdes Gurriel at 180. Andrew Benintendi follows him at 181. I don't know. Like, is he better than those guys? Like, probably, but it's so hard to say.
He could be. Yeah. I think he definitely could be. But yeah, there could be a, you know, that transitional period, even though he has the type of profile that I think will transition a little more seamlessly. Like, he has good contact skills, good power, really good approach. I think he had more walks than steals combined over the last 3 years. Yeah, because he had 22 more walks than steals. Excuse me, more walks than strikeouts. I meant to say. I hope you have more walks than steals. But 103 walks to 81 strikeouts in 2019, 72 to 73 in 2020, and then 88 to 89. So yeah, it's basically been equal or more walks than strikeouts. So yeah, I think he's a guy that shouldn't have too much hard of a time, but I also said similar things about Ha-Seong Kim last year, even though he doesn't have quite the power, obviously, but you know, he came over with a similar contact and, you know, approach profile that I thought would transition easier than most, but he didn't. So it's hard to say, but I think he has the potential to be maybe close to top 100 if everything clicks right. But yeah, I think conservatively, I figured this spot was pretty solid for him.
Yeah, and Hideki Matsui is definitely a possible outcome. So that would obviously be much, much higher in the profile. Going back to what you said about the steals over walks, I was just curious. Adalberto Mondesi, guess his career walks.
Total walks?
Total career walks. He's had 343 career games. How many career walks has he had?
343. I'll say, I don't know, the number 38 sticking out in my head.
56. But he's stolen 128 bases.
He's probably, now I'm curious how many more have been like that. Maybe guys like, I don't know, Juan Pierre? I don't know. I'm thinking of guys that just steal a ton.
Yeah. Well, Mondesi just doesn't walk either, so his plate discipline's so bad.
That doesn't help either, that's, yeah.
When you said that, it's like struck. I was like, I got to look at that because that'd be interesting.
Yeah, that's the first guy you think of.
Yeah.
Steals and walks.
Yeah, no doubt. Juan Pierre had 464 career walks to 614 career stolen bases. So he's okay. Another one.
Yep. Yeah, it's a
good call.
It's one thing if you're like stealing 100, like Ricky Henderson, probably, you know, he walked a bunch, but he stole even more. Sure. But that's obviously a much different story. But
yeah,
so I think we're both roughly in the same range, like, you know, in the 150 to like 180 or so range.
Yeah.
Right now, we mentioned some outfielders near him. I think definitely if he debuts and looks pretty damn good, like kind of coming over as a guy we thought he could be, then I'll probably bump him up closer to like 125 or so. But yeah, definitely, I think right now this is a solid range in the, you know, the back half of the top 200, at least for now. We'll see. Guess you gotta see how he looks in the major leagues. We all, you know, we only can go off, you know, stats and how we think he's gonna translate over from Japan. So moving on here, we'll start with hitters here, and then we'll go into pitchers after the break. We'll start with some fallers. First name we have on the list is a prospect, though, Jason Dominguez. He has fallen. He's fallen kind of consistently over the last handful of months. He's down from my last update. He was 144 overall, down to 175 overall. Just a lot of concerns and everything but the power. Concerns how much he run, concerned with how much average he hits for. Still very young. He could make this, you know, me dropping him look bad, but I think he's definitely a follower right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it seems like the industry kind of agrees as well. I think that, you know, he's going like for prospect standards. I feel like he's going as like the 40th prospect off the board, which is interesting. But, you know, the expectations are just too high is the problem. So when stupid MLB Network comps him to like Bo Jackson, Mickey Mantle, and Mike Trout all combined into one superhero, like what do you expect? The hype is going to be insane. And we know MLB Network sucks. Obviously, they got rid of Ken Rosenthal. That's another story. But when your expectations are so high, there's hardly any room to go up. So I agree. I'm concerned about the hit tool to an extent. We saw him strike out at a high clip in A-ball, 31%. Yeah, he's young compared to level. He did a lot of things, though. I mean, he hit the ball hard still. We knew he was going to do that. There's going to be a lot of power. He still posted a 105 WRC plus. So he was above league average there. Home run power is there. He actually stole 9 bags last year in 56 games, which is kind of interesting. I don't really know if how much speed will be a part of his game moving forward, but I do think that Jason is one of those guys that he's going to be. I think this year is going to really make or break him.
Absolutely.
Like, he's all right. So let's just say hypothetically he comes out and is crazy hot to start the year. Like everybody's gonna be talking about him being the number one prospect and stuff like that. But if he comes out and sucks, everybody's gonna say he's Kevin Maiton and just write him off. So like
someone's already mentioned the Kevin Maiton comp to me. I'm like, let's not go overboard yet. I don't think we're saying he's Kevin Maiton 2.0 right now, but
yeah,
it's gonna be a huge year for him.
Yeah, people are just going to take one extreme or the other on him. I mean, he's going to be 19 next year. Like, it's going to be a big year for him. So I just think, like, maybe it's a decent buy low on him right now because if he does take off, like, you could trade him for anything, really, like, if he gets hot. So maybe it's worth getting him now while his value's down a little bit and then seeing where he goes. You know, worst case, if he continues to suck, like, you bought low, right? So it's not that big of a deal.
Right.
Yeah, he's an interesting one.
I think in 2022, one of two things is going to happen with Dominguez. Either he's a top 15 prospect at end of the season, or he's outside the top 100. I don't see really any. I don't see any middle ground to be had there. It's a very small chance of it. But yeah, either he shows well and everyone bumps him back way back up, or he kind of struggles and underwhelms, and then people are like, all right, maybe he's not what we thought he was, and move him down. But yeah. definitely a huge year for Dominguez coming here in 2022. Another prospect here before we get into the MLB guys, Marco Luciano. We've talked about him a bit, but you know, I moved him down because he's still inside my top 100 overall. Let's see, where did I put him exactly? He is. Oh no, he fell out. He's 116 overall for me. He was 100 last time, but yeah, I just, people have been asking me like why the fall for Luciano, and I still think he's gonna be a pretty good player. Like I think the power is definitely legit. I just again wonder if the hit tool is as robust as we thought it was. I wonder how much he steals. I wonder maybe he's more of a 10 to 15 steal guy than a 20 plus like we kind of thought a year ago. So if he's like a 25 homer, 10 steal guy with a 260, 270 average, again, that's pretty good. That'll play. Could be a top 100 dynasty guy or player in your drafts every year down the road. But I just don't think the overall package is quite as good as we thought when he was kind of breaking out down in, the Arizona League back in 2019. So, yeah, he's definitely a follower for me too.
Do you think he runs, though? Like, I don't think he steals any bases. Like, I think he's going to be like a 2 to 5 steal guy at the next level.
It's possible. Yeah. Like 10 to 15, I think is the best case scenario for him right now. Like, he's got some speed. Like he's athletic. I think he could have the speed, but yeah, I don't know how the body, maybe if he kind of fills out more and kind of focuses more on the power side of things. And maybe he is only a guy that adds, a few in sprinkled sporadically. Yeah. I mean, that's
only
fair.
He only attempted 11 last season, and that was over 450 plate appearances, and he was only successful 6 times. So, and that was in low A where they were doing all those dumb rules and people were stealing out the wazoo. So,
freaking Drew Romo, a catcher, had like 30 something steals because of it. And like,
right. Yeah. Veen stole like 6 in one game, dumb like that.
Veen turned into Ricky Henderson down there for a bit of time. Like, he was like leading like the minor leagues in steals in like June or whatever. He was up there at least. But
yeah, I think Luciano's a case where when you watch him, you get more out of it than looking at the stat line. I think we saw the stat line falter in high A. I mean, he tanked a 217 batting average there, but in the fall league, he just wasn't good. Like every time we saw him, he wasn't good at all. And he had no hustle and no effort. And that's what I didn't like. I didn't like that. That's a red flag to me. Maybe he just didn't want to be there.
Yeah. I don't know. Granted, that can sometimes happen, a long season. I've seen that. I saw that in 2019 too, but yeah, no, I echo a lot of that. And he didn't look good in high A though. Obviously was very low for the, very young for the level, but yeah, you look at nothing like you just look at, and you don't try to scout off stats obviously, but nothing really in this profile right now is giving me that kind of warm and fuzzy feeling, so to speak. Like, look at what he did out in the fall of the year. Yeah, he had 3 bombs in 21 games, but overall 253, 356. Yeah, that's a solid enough OBP. Walked 11 times, but then again, everybody. Yeah. I could have had a 350 OBP in the fall league this year with how many walks were flying around.
You could have stood in the box and never swung the bat once and probably had a 50% walk rate.
Yep, I probably could have.
No joke.
Especially in those couple games we were at that had like 20 whatever walks, and my word, that was rough to watch. Like, it's the third inning's been going on for an hour and 20 minutes now. This is cool. Mm. But so don't take that OBP with, too heavily. But yeah, ISO was 120. Yeah, during the season, the ISO was 213. So that's solid. Like I said, I think the power is there, but I don't know. He's through 153 games, 272 hitter. K rate's not great. 15 steals, but caught 11 times. Like, if you have that low of a success rate, you're not going to get the green light. That's under 60%. So you're not going to get the green light too often when you're stealing at like a 57% rate. So yeah, I don't know how much he steals. I don't know if the average, like that 272 average might be a pretty good range for him long-term. So yeah, 270-ish hitter, 25 to 30 home runs, but not a lot of steals. So let's see. Best case scenario, Michael Conforto now? I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, so definitely, like I said, still like Luciano. I'm not saying I don't like him. I'm not saying he's going to be bad, but I just don't think he's got superstar written all over him. He could be a good player, but not a great player. I think this is where I'm at personally on him. couple MLB guys here. Mike Moustakas is the first one we have here. He both fell a decent amount in our rankings for, I think, for various reasons. Both, you know, he's getting older. He's now 33 years old. His playing time has kind of gone down. He can't stay on the field much anymore. He only had 206 plate appearances this year. I don't know how he fits in, you know, in 2022 and beyond with Cincinnati. Plus, the other skills are just kind of eroding. For a while, he was kind of a quiet, steady producer. You know, a lot of good power years, you know, 38 homers 2017, 28 in 2018, 35 in 2019. Average is always kind of hovering right around 250 or so. But the last 2 years, 230 with 8 homers in 44 games, and then 208 with 6 home runs in 62 games. So now 14 over the last 106 games with an average south of 220. I don't know. Do you think there's any bounce back here? Or I don't know. He's just maybe just a guy that's going to keep falling and be a part-time player for the last few years of his career.
Yeah, and Steamer has him as a part-time player. They only have him like 330 plate appearances. I don't know. I mean, Roster Resource actually has him on the bench, which is interesting. In that case, he's not even worthy to be in a top 500. You got to think that he gets plate appearances somewhere, right? I mean, especially if the DH comes, but I don't know.
I mean, he could play second. He could play third. Maybe they can use him up, but it's like they have at second base, they have India. That's his spot now.
Yep.
And at third, they still have Eugenio Suarez, who's at least still hitting for more power than Moustakas is.
Yep. He's not taking Votto's spot at first.
No, he's not taking. So maybe best case scenario, he platoons with Suarez as a lefty, yeah. Lefty platoon.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think he can play the outfield at all. So I don't think that's an option. And obviously, you know, maybe they try to put him at short. Who knows? They tried putting Suarez at short. Maybe they put Moose at short. But no, I'm kidding. That obviously would not work out. But yeah, I just don't see where he fits in. And with this infield being pretty set for the most part, outside of shortstop. But, you know, maybe they get Jose Barrero on the way too.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. And plus, like, his skills are kind of eroding. So now he's not one I even want to think about in Dynasty anymore. But he's still holding on hope. Like, if he gets a starting job and that power could still be there, that's kind of what's keeping him in the back end of my top 500. But yeah, if he's, again, showing what he was in 2020, 2021, first half of 2022, he's going to fall out quickly.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Yeah, I agree.
The other guy here is a little more interesting of a name. Trent Grisham. Coming off a not a bad year, but not a good year either. Like, we're coming, you know, in 2019, 2020, he flashed some solid skills, good OBP skills, nice little power speed blend. And the shortened 2020 year, he had 10 home runs and 10 steals in just 252 plate appearances. Maybe like, oh, maybe he's the next like high OBP 2020 type, but still had 15 home runs, 13 steals last year. Only hit 242. OBP dropped to 327. This wasn't, you know, it was, I think, a step back for Trent Grisham. So yeah, he is another one that's fallen. For me, he is now currently, I still have him 93rd overall, but he's in danger of being outside my top 100 pretty damn quick. I still like the skill set, so I'm keeping him there. But I have a lot of names I like that are right outside my top 100 that could easily vault past him pretty quickly here. So yeah, I think it's going to be a big year for Grisham as well.
Yeah, I just I don't know. Who is he? It's hard to say for sure.
Right.
I mean, based on the sample that we have so far of almost 1,000 plate appearances in the majors, he's a 242 hitter, which is exactly what he was last year. So that's tough. I mean, the shortened season maybe gave us a little bit of false hope. I mean, he did go hit 10 home runs and stole 10 bags, and he played 59 games. So that gave us a hope. I mean, that was an easy 2020 guy, like just 500 plate appearances. That's pacing 2020, which 2020 guys are pretty attractive. And we saw that the OBP tanked this year as well. The average tanked just kind of across the board. And honestly, like, I feel like the Padres kind of did him a little disservice by not putting him at the top of the lineup. He hit like seventh most days, which, right, I don't think helped him. And when that's happening, obviously the counting stats are going to be down. He's going to get less plate appearances. All that matters. Roster Resource has him penciled in at the leadoff spot for next year. It is important to remember that he was just 24 last year. So there is a possibility that we see him kind of take a step forward still. I mean, it's not a real possibility. His contact rates are really good is what doesn't make sense to me. I mean, his contact rates improved last year. His zone contact went up a good bit to 87.7%, which is a good number. And his overall contact was 80.6%, which is a really good number as well. He doesn't chase outside the zone at all. That O-swing at 20% is so good. I don't know. Like, it's hard to identify like one thing in the profile. Right. That's what I'm struggling with. There's like not anything in the profile that stands out to tell me like, oh, he's going to take a step forward. I mean, considering his speed, he's a low BABIP guy. I mean, he's like league average BABIP, I guess we should say. But I don't know. He's a tough one to peg. I still think the potential's there, but it's not what I once thought he would be.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, the speed is still great. The approach is still great. Like, his sprint speed's been around 29 feet per second, which is top 10% in the league, 91st percentile last year. Chase rate, as you mentioned, was great. Contact skills are still there, but the walk rate's been above 10% each of his first 3 years. But it's the quality of contact that just hasn't been there. Like, you look at, he's had a below league average barrel rate in two of the 3 years. Exit velo has been kind of meh. Max exit velo, also kind of meh. X slug has only been above 370 in 2020, where it was 482. Hard hit rate is kind of around league average. It's not bad, but I don't know if there's that next. It's not like underlying metric where I'm like, oh, that'll, spur him back up the rankings. I just don't see it. Maybe he could rise back up a little bit, but I don't know if his ceiling is like a top 70 player. Right now, maybe slightly higher than OBP, but I don't think he's ever going to be a top 50 guy like we kind of thought he was. Like, I think at one point he was top 50 for me, maybe entering 2021. But yeah, I don't see that ever coming back for him unless he does something to unlock more power. But yeah, the quality of contact just isn't there right now. Let's move over to some risers here. There's several intriguing names here. We'll start with a couple of outfielders. Very different profiles too. Like, these are both very intriguing guys, but for very different reasons. Brian Reynolds of the Pittsburgh Pirates and Miles Straw, or as Jordan Rosenblum says over in Europe, they call him Kilometer Straw. And then Jesse Roche commented on that because Jordan put it the normal spelling of kilometers with an I, and then Jesse Roche was like, no, it's kilometers, K-Y-L-O. It's good the way you spell miles, so right. It's kind of funny. But yeah, Brian Reynolds also was spelled with a Y, so actually that's kind of fit together, I guess, with their Ys in their first names instead of the I's. But yeah, very different profiles, obviously. Reynolds, great hit tool, solid power. Straw, obviously, is a speed guy. Let's start with Brian Reynolds because I think he is a perfect example of the underrated, undervalued hitter because there's nothing flashy about him. He's not a sexy pick. Like, you're not like, oh yeah, let's go out and get Brian Reynolds. But in two of his 3 years now, he has shown elite contact skills, good power, like a 20 to 25 homer guy. I don't think it'll be 30, but he had 24 home runs this past year. Slugging percentage was 522. X slug exactly the same. Hard hit rate was solid. The approach is there. There's a lot to like. Yeah, he doesn't provide much speed, but there's not there's not many guys that have this high of a average slash power floor that Reynolds can bring. So I think he's definitely pushing top 50, and you probably can get him for, you know, a price that's less than that right now.
Oh yeah, Reynolds is a stud. Everybody just completely wrote him off after the 2020 year for a stupid reason. I mean, it was because his batting average, he was such a batting average like king in 2019, and then he hit 189, but his BABIP was 231. Like,
I know, it was crazy.
Anybody could have looked at it. Like, I should have had it. I should have gotten Brian Reynolds in every draft last year. You know, I completely missed it. His ISO's 220. Like, that's good power for high average hitter like that. It's really good power. The OBP skills are really good as well. Everything in Reynolds' profile is what you should want in a hitter on your fantasy team because he's so safe. You know exactly what you're going to get from him. I think the pop's legit. I think he's, like you mentioned, a 20-25 home run guy. But with everything else he brings, in the Pittsburgh Pirates lineup, he scored 93 runs and drove in 90 right? in the Pirates lineup.
And that's going to be a better lineup this year, yeah. too. Like, O'Neill Cruz will be in there full time, whether it's opening day or shortly into the season.
Yeah.
Probably a nice bounce back for Cabrian Hayes. So yeah. Maybe it won't, obviously, it's not going to be a juggernaut, but definitely a lineup on the rise.
It's much better. And he still managed to put up those counting stats. Like, this year, I'm willing to bank on him going 100-100 in those categories with another 300 average.
Yeah. In two of the 3 years, like it's two full years, 2019 and 2021, is he hit over 300 both years. OBP over 375 both years, and a slugging percentage over 500 both years. ISO was a little under 200 his rookie year, a little over 200 last year. Again, it's not huge power, but it's 25 homer power for sure. Good counting stats. He could even add in a little bit of speed. Like, I didn't realize he was 80th percentile sprint speed. That was higher than I thought. So I'm not saying he's going to be at a bunch more, but he's at least like maybe a 5-6 steal guy. He had 5 last year. I don't know why he can't add maybe a couple more this year. So, like, it would not surprise me yet. Another 300 average, 25 home runs, 100 plus, and, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 steals, something like that. That's very good. And a guy that will be underrated just because of the skill set. This always the type of guy that gets underrated. And then obviously he's in Pittsburgh. Then, you know, these guys always get underrated as well, unless you're, you know, super toolsy like O'Neill Cruz. But yeah, definitely rising. Go out and get Reynolds. He's a great buy right now. Buy high or, you know, I don't say this is buy low, but his value is still lower than it should be.
Oh, his ADP is currently 100 on FBC. Like, that's a stupid good value.
Oh, he should be higher than that.
I agree.
In my rankings, where did I bump him up to? I want to say it was around 60. Let's see. Yep, 62. He's right for outfielders, right around. Actually, he's right behind a massive glob. Randy Arozarena, Riley Green, Byron Buxton, Whit Merrifield, Kittle Marte, Jesse Winker. Ahead of guys like Kirilov, Brendan Lowe, George. I have him ahead of George Springer now. I have him ahead of like Brennan Davis. So, yeah, definitely a great buy right now for Dynasty. But probably one of my favorite buys for Dynasty Leagues right now because he's just probably will always be underrated. Maybe he's like the next like Michael Brantley, you know, long career of good numbers, but always was underrated because he didn't have the sexy, you know, profile. But yeah, love some Brian Reynolds. And as for Miles Straw, he's definitely a riser. Like, that's a definite. But I almost wonder if maybe he's a good time to sell him because of how much higher some others value him. Like, he's getting some crazy, like, 80. Where's his ADP in the
For draft champions, it's 122. And he has a min pick of 67.
Yeah, the speed is there, and we all know people love chasing the speed, but there's very limited offensive potential here. Like, I think last year is a pretty fair, you know, spot for him, you know, production wise, 271. I think he can hit right around there. He's got the solid contact skills, great speed, 30 steal guy for sure. This is also a guy that had a higher OBP than slugging percentage. Like, there's very minimal power. So I think he can be a guy that is good in two categories, assuming he leads off for Cleveland, which I think he probably will, or at least have a chance to. So good amount of runs scored. You'll have 80 to 90 runs scored. Good amount of steals. Average, it won't kill you. But there is absolutely nothing to speak of in terms of, like, home runs, RBI. He's not going to be that type of guy. So I think he's getting overvalued at this point.
Oh, yeah. And that's so he's a riser from the standpoint of that's where the market values him. And yes, like, naturally he moved up our rankings because of that. And I do factor that in. Like, trade value is a big factor of what I include in my rankings. But also, he's a compiler. Like, he stole 30 bases over 638 plate appearances last year. So if he has 550 next year, what if he only, and Steamer projects him at 22? So, like, if he only steals 22 bases, there's no return to be had there. Like, I just can't get on board with it personally.
This is easily a guy that could be a bench guy. If things don't go well at the plate, he could be back into like a bench reserve outfielder, pinch runner role, only starting sporadically. So, yeah, definitely a kind of a risky profile to make a big investment on. So he's not a guy that I want to invest on per se. But another outfielder on our list here that I am buying into this year, both for dynasty and redraft leagues, Jesus Sanchez of the Miami Marlins. He had kind of a up and down minor league career. He'd show flashes of certain tools, but never really fully put together. He didn't have that big statistical season at any level, but last year showed some, actually both year, though 2020 was a very small sample size, but overall he's shown some pretty solid power. There's definitely a strikeout issue that needs to be corrected, but the power is definitely there. But at the same time, he might be another one that gets overrated because, yeah, the power is there. I think he could definitely be a 30 homer type of guy with an average that won't be great but won't kill you, maybe 250, 260. But the speed element of this game is gone. Not that he was ever going to be a big stolen base guy, but he has zero steals his first 280 plate appearances. So maybe he's a two, maybe best case scenario, he's Franmil Reyes, type of player. You think that's fair?
Yeah, that's what I heard James Anderson comp him to Franmil, and James said he would put him, I think, fourth on his prospect list, and that was really eye-opening when he said that. I don't know. He's intriguing. I think that there's – obviously the power's legit. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him hit 30 next year. The batting average, I think, is going to be serviceable, even though we saw a lot of fluctuating batting averages in the minors. I mean, we saw him hit as high as 305 in a full season, which was crazy, and that was in 2017 in low A. He hit 301 the following year in high A, and then he kind of tailed off. Contact rates are fine. The strikeout rates are the biggest concern, and
right. That's
the thing. I mean, he performed fine in the lower level of the minors, but by the time he hit AAA, the strikeout rate spiked, and that's where it kind of – I mean, he's in AAA in 2019 had a – well, that's just a small sample. I don't want to discuss that, but yeah, I mean, 31% last year, you'd like to see him get down. Steamer projects him at 24%, which is interesting.
That'd be great if he can do it.
Yeah, if he does that, then you can certainly count on a higher batting average than 250. I think I don't know.
Yeah, he's definitely intriguing with that power, but I'll say this, he's a riser, but don't go overboard. I think that's how I'll sum up Jesus Sanchez. Just because of the zero speed anymore and the average that could maybe be just not so great. But still, again, it's 250. He's 251 for his career, honestly, for last year. I think that's fair. Maybe a little bit more, but I don't think he's more than 270. So, yeah, definitely could be a back-end top 100 guy, but not sure there's any chance he rises past that. Let's move over to a couple of infielders now, some young guys that showed very well in 2021. That's Bryson Stott and O'Neal Cruz. O'Neal Cruz is very, like, I love O'Neal Cruz. The power speed is there. I said he could be like the Jazz Chisholm of 2022 in my prospect hitter for redraft article. But, and he's never shown an issue at the plate in terms of like hitting for average. Like, he's a 281 career hitter in the minors, but he's 6'7. Longer levers, those will be, that will be exposed. He does have a little bit of a strikeout issue as well, but that power speed is so damn enticing. He'll be 25 plus, 15 plus type of guy. I mean, Bryson Stott is just so underrated. Our buddy Chris Welsh absolutely loves Stott. I do as well. I think he's going to be an ideal number two hitter. He's got great OBP skills, doesn't strike out that much. Has 20 homer pop, 15 steals. I think he's going to score a ton of runs. Like, I think Stott's going to be an annual 100-plus run guy, especially hitting in front of Bryce Harper for the foreseeable future. So these are two guys definitely on the rise for me. One, the sexier profile, one not so sexy, but definitely two guys I'm trying to invest heavily in Dynasty Leagues.
Stott reminds me of the Brian Reynolds route. He's doing exactly what we saw Reynolds do. I mean, people didn't like goo-goo gaga over Reynolds' hit tool as a minor leaguer, and really not the same with Stott, but they consistently hit for average. And I don't know. I see him taking that route. I think the power's there. It wouldn't surprise me to see him be that kind of Brian Reynolds player that's just constantly undervalued because the profile's not super sexy. He even steals some bags too, which is nice. Yeah. I like that.
It's like all sneaky, you know. He's very close to a 300, 400, 500 slash line in his minor league career. He's right underneath all three. 298, 390, 488. So again, it won't be huge power, won't be huge speed, but 280 plus average, 380 plus OBP, 20 homers, 15 steals, crap ton of runs scored. This is a guy I'm going to invest in.
Brian Reynolds. Yeah. To a T. Yeah, O'Neill Cruz, on the other hand, he's the exact opposite of Stott. His value is going crazy right now with a lot of hype around the name. Steamer obviously buying into the hype, just 451 projected plate appearances, but has him going 20 home runs with 14 stolen bases and a 281 average. That seems high to project a 281 average on this guy, in my opinion. But
very high. Which is interesting because Steamer usually – from what I've seen, it's been a little more on the conservative side with batting average. So the guy that has the kind of profile he has, a 281 average, is very interesting.
Yep, it is quite interesting. I'm curious. I'm going to pull up. My computer's being dumb. I was going to pull up the projected average leaders for Steamer and see.
I guarantee he's probably top 25.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Overall for average, I mean.
Oh, yeah. All right, finally getting up. When I say he was 281... That would be 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah. I just pulled it up, too. They don't have numbers next to the names. But, yeah, it looks like around top 25.
22, yep.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, definitely rising for Cruz. But, again, I think it says tread lightly with Cruz because there's definitely a little bit of a lower floor here if the approach doesn't get corrected. But, yeah, definitely love that power speed. Definitely could be, like I said, Jazz Chisholm of 2022. Big power speed. Maybe not so great of an average, but definitely a very good buy right now in Dynasty Leagues. A couple more guys who hit the break, a couple prospects that have vaulted up. Anthony Volpe, Riley Green. I recently, when you're listening to this, it would have been yesterday, I tweeted that I think there's 7 prospects that if everything hits right, they hit their ceiling, like 100% upside, and everything just clicks with them, they have fantasy first round ceilings. And I put Anthony Volpe as one of those 7. Like, the hit tool is there. The power's there. Speed is there. He could be a 25 homer, 30 steal guy with good average, good OBP. Like, that is definitely a guy that could be a first rounder if everything clicks. So definitely love Volpe. And then Riley Green, it's another guy that gets super underrated. I think Riley Green could be Brian Reynolds with more speed. Like, add 10 to 15 steals to what Brian Reynolds can do. And I think that could be Riley Green if everything clicks with him as well. So, a guy that is pushing top 50 for me overall. I mean, he's a great time, you know, for that value to keep going up because he's just about the debut early in the season. He's got all the skills that you need to be a fantasy stud in this world we live in. So, yeah, definitely love Riley Green right now as well.
Yeah, both are studs. I'm not underrating Riley Green. I mean, he's not my number 3 prospect for a reason. He's that good. And honestly, like, I sit here and wonder, like, why do I have Volpe? I have Volpe 10th, but, like, is there that much difference between them?
I guess
the biggest difference is that Green's done it at a higher level. And so if Volpe does that this year, then and Volpe might be a sneaky number 1 prospect, like, this time next year.
He could, yes. He'll maybe get closer to it, but he'll probably get the AAA this year. But, yeah, with looking at the guys ahead of him, obviously Witt will graduate, J-Rod should graduate. Marte won't, but I can see Volpe leapfrogging him. I would have put no issue with anybody putting Volpe 3rd right now. Green will graduate, Torque will graduate, Rutschman will graduate. So yeah, definitely he'll be up there with, it'll probably be like him, Noel V, Abrams, and like Robert Hassel and whoever else pops up this year. But those are kind of like the early leaders in the clubhouse. So yeah, definitely in Yankee Stadium, he'll have a good lineup to hit in, good ballpark to hit in. So yeah, a lot to like with Anthony Volpe. Buy in. The hype is real. The production is real. I hate to admit it because he's a Yankee and I don't want him to be great, but I think he's going to be a guy that gives me nightmares for a while as a Yankee and as a guy that's probably been multiple All-Star in this league. Let's go ahead and hit a quick break. We'll come back on the other side and get into some pitchers, so don't go anywhere.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAC action with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
All right, welcome back from the break. Let's get into some pitchers now. We have four names. We put Max Fried in the wrong spot. Four names here for fallers, for pitchers. Both, all four of these guys are very talented, but at this point, they're some injuries. All four have injury concerns, which is, I think, the biggest reason why they're falling. Two of them are getting a little older as well. But let's start with a trio of lefties. Clayton Kershaw, Carlos Rodon, Hyunjin Ryu, and also Lance McCullers Jr. Chris, which one are you the most concerned about right now? Because like I said, there's injury concerns with all four of these guys, but which one are you most concerned about?
Probably Kershaw, just due to age. He'll be 34 next year. Statistically, you look, and Kershaw had a stellar year last year.
Yeah, he was still pretty good.
Yeah, despite his ERA, what his ERA said at 3.55, I mean, his FIP was 3 even. His strikeout rate was still near 30%. His swinging strike rate was 16.7%. It was the highest of his career. And you think about elite Kershaw, like he was that good this year getting swings and misses. It just didn't really translate to strikeout rate, which, I honestly think it could have. He walked just 4.3% of batters. Everything was great last year. The only problem is he only pitched 120 innings. We have really no clue what's going on right now with his injury other than I think it kind of speaks volumes that the Dodgers didn't give him a qualifying offer. I think that maybe speaks how they feel about his injury, that he wasn't worth $18.8 million. So I don't know. I would say he's arguably the most concerning, even though I think he could give you a good 100 innings, but I'm just scared it's not going to be much more than 100 innings, really.
Yeah, and there's been like retirement rumors. I don't think he's going to retire, but I don't think he's going to be a guy that pitches to like into his late 30s, near 40, like Max Scherzer is. So maybe what we got, let's realistically say another 3-4 years maybe of Clayton Kershaw. Maybe this contract he signs after the lockout is his last one, and it's a couple-year deal with whoever, maybe Texas, who knows. I know he's from there. But, yeah, I still think he can be like a 23, 24, 25 start guy with good ratios. Like it shows how good someone's been when a 3.55 ERA is a full run above their career ERA. He's a 2.49 career ERA. That is just ridiculous. He had a, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That was a 10-year run of an ERA under 3 every season with 3 years under 2. Lowest was 1.69 back in 2016. So that shows how good he's been. Career strikeout minus walk rate at 4.4. So, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. That's no question there. But is he a guy that you want to be investing in dynasty leagues? I've been kind of investing in redraft leagues this year because I think the price tag has fallen to the point where I'm comfortable taking him. Like he's like been like my fourth, fifth, sixth starting pitcher in some drafts, which I'm fine with. If he's my SP5, I'm fine with that risk of him when he's going another 120, innings from where I'm getting him, like past pick 200. But yeah, in dynasty, not a guy that I'd be looking to buy into right now. And same thing with Hyunjin Ryu. Like, he's been pretty good, obviously not Kershaw levels, but he's also right around, let's see, I think Ryu might even be older. See, Kershaw's 30, yeah, Kershaw's 33. So, yeah, Ryu's about a year older. Again, he's a guy, he did pitch 31 innings this year, but to a 4.37 ERA, 1.23 whip. Like, it was his worst year, really, since he kind of, his early, his first couple of years were pretty good. 2017 was pretty good. Since then, he had 3 years under a 3 ERA, 2018, 2019, 2020. And then I said, this is his worst full season of his career. So you got to wonder if maybe the ship has sailed on him being a top tier guy anymore. So definitely not one I want to invest in right now, either with that age and the production looking as good at decline. The other two, though, especially Lance McCullers, and Carlos Rodon, I think, I don't know, are you selling them? Are you maybe buying them? Because I think the industry in general has, everybody seems to be dropping both these guys, whether it's redraft or dynasty, down quite a bit. So maybe it's a good time to buy, but there's so much risk there, though.
I know. It might be a good time to buy. I'm honestly, I have both in one of my dynasty leagues. I'm trying to actively sell both. And it's not going super well, but
the talent's there for each of them to be a top 25 arm.
Yeah, like, no doubt.
They've both been a top 25 arm at one point. Like, Rodon was, I think, was Rodon a top 25 arm this past year?
They both easily were, I'm almost certain.
If not, they were close. Like, they're definitely, that talent is there. But yeah, with each of the, you know, their injury history and you know, especially multiple with both these guys now, arm issues, it's very, you know, they could pop off, be a top 10 guy, or they could just miss most of the season or, you know, have significant surgery on one way or the other. So it's just like the range of outcomes here for these guys is so wide.
Yeah. Rodon was 10th on the Rasball Player Rater for pitchers last year and McCullers 23rd. So.
Okay. Yeah. So both top 25 guys, but I don't know. But, I hesitate to invest, but again, for you or anybody out there that has either of these guys, I wouldn't just be looking to sell like 100%, like, don't sell low on these guys.
No.
Obviously, get a good return, which is obviously why you haven't made the deals yet on these guys. I'm sure you haven't got anything you like, but for me, I still have Rodon 100 overall, but that is a 43 spot drop from 57 at my last update. McCullers is a little below that. He's 146, a 69 spot drop. He was 77th last time. So McCullers is down in the Luis Garcia, Jesus Lizardo, George Kirby, Tariq Skubal range for me now. Well, Rodon has dropped down into, you know, Tyler Glasnow, Shane Boz, Zach Gallen. Boz will probably rise back up. So will Glasnow when he's healthy. So I don't know. I'm not sure I want to invest. I want to see where what type of deal he ends up with, too, where he ends up after the lockout. He's still a free agent right now. So I don't know. Which one would you, if you had to invest in one, which one would you go with right now?
I guess probably McCullers, because Rodon, while McCullers has a not great injury track record, I would say Rodon's is a lot worse. And you look at the amount of innings he's thrown each year, and I don't know. I mean, what does he top out at next year? Like, he probably stays at 130 again, which is crazy, but you're almost guaranteeing an injury stint in there. So you have to factor that in with him. And yeah, while he was so good, I don't think he's going to give you the innings. And while he may be better on like a printing basis, McCullers, which I don't know, McCullers was really good this year. That's tough to say. I trust him to produce the innings that he would need to be high end guy, basically.
I hear you. I'm with you there. And it's like, you look at Rodon's performance last year, like, it was really good. Like you said, you know, 132 and 2/3 innings, 2.37 ERA, 0.96 WHIP. 34.6% K rate, top 4% of the league there. All the ERA indicators backed up his performance as well. A lot of red on a Savant page. So definitely a very, very good year. And it was backed up. I wouldn't say it's fluky, but at the same time, he's really a two pitch guy. He throws three pitches. Okay. I'm not counting the curveball. He threw 38 times for 1.7%. But three pitches, four-seamer, slider, changeup. The four-seamer, very, very good. Slider, elite. Changeup, not so good. Like, the changeup, he was a 367 batting average against on the changeup, 348 XBA, 612 slugging allowed, 551 X slug. He got some whiffs with that 36.3%, which was pretty good, but it was just a pitch that got hit hard. And I don't know if he can really rely on it, especially against, he only threw it against righties, didn't throw it against lefties at all. He was only threw six pitches that weren't a fastball or slider against lefties. So, you know me, everyone knows me, I'm not a fan of these kind of two pitch guys. So while I don't think there was anything fluky in his 2021 performance, I am concerned if he can maintain it though, just with the fact that he's really a two pitch guy and people are going to figure that out. They'll say, all right, I only have to sit on the fastball or the slider. Again, both very good pitches, but he needs that changeup to really come along to, I think, sustain long-term success, even at a 120 to 140 inning range. So definitely a risky guy for me. And I had that same kind of issue with McCullers previously, but he kind of corrected that, you know, added in the slider this past year. So now he's at three really good off-speed pitches, slider, curve, and changeup, all had whiff rates above 35%. The sinker was serviceable enough. So he's got a wider range of good pitches here that I feel better about him, that even if they're in a similar range in terms of innings wise every year, where maybe you only can count on them for 20 to 25 starts, I think I feel more comfortable with McCullers moving forward. And now that makes me question why I have Carlos Rodon higher in my rankings. See, that this is good to talk it out,
yeah,
because we did that with prospect rankings and we changed them right on the fly, where, you know, until you really think about it out loud, sometimes you gotta, you gotta do that. So yeah,
it helps to talk it out.
Yeah. But I still like Rodon too, but yeah, McCullers might be the slightly less risky guy moving forward.
Yeah, no, I agree, which is interesting to say. For what it's worth, on the Razzball Play Rater, they have the dollar amount, like full season return, but on a dollar per basis, like game, Rodon was second behind Jacob DeGrom for starters. DeGrom was an obnoxious $64 worth per start, and Rodon was second of pitchers with 34. That just shows you how good DeGrom was.
Oh my God, almost double my word.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's ahead of like Corbin Burns.
Ahead of Scherzer. Scherzer was right behind him. Burns was $31 per start. Glasnow was $33 per start. Yeah, it really opens your eyes at how good he was per start, but how much will he actually start? That's the question.
Yeah. And that's a great question. Very valid question. And the reason why these two guys are falling. But yeah, maybe if you can sneak in a buy low offer, it might not be too bad if you don't have to give up too much to get them. Because as we both alluded to, the upside, if they do make a 30 start season again, which again, not very high probability of that, but if they do, the return could be huge. So definitely two very interesting guys heading into 2022, that's for sure. Let's move over to our risers here. We have a lot of names on the risers list, starting with Logan Webb. He's a guy that I admit I was slower to come around to. I wasn't sure, you know, just how good he could be, if the performance in 2021 was valid. Not saying it was fluky, but I was like, can he get to that ace level? And I'm coming around to the fact that I think he is a fantasy ace. Maybe he doesn't have the super elite K rate, like a, you know, Corbin Burns, Max Scherzer, Jacob DeGrom K rate, but I think, you know, Buehler has made it work with a, you know, good but not elite K rate, like 26, 27, 28%, still pretty good. I think Webb can be in that range. He was 26.5 last year with a 3.03 ERA, 1.11 whip. I think he could be a pretty durable guy moving forward. He looks like a guy that could be a 30 start a year guy. Obviously, we never know, but has the looks of a guy that could give you, you know, good innings year in, year out. That ground ball rate is elite, only behind Framber Valdez. So he gets ground balls. He can miss bats at a pretty good clip. Limit the ratio is good pitcher's park. A lot to like here, Logan Webb. So I'm finally coming around to, you know, buying in. All right, this guy is a potential like back ends. I don't think he's ever going to be like top five, but like a top 10 to 15 arm moving forward for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was really slow to come around on him, but he's, I think, absolutely stud pitcher. You look and he mixes the four-seam slider and changeup well. He throws them all pretty efficiently for strikes. The swinging strike rate is really good on the slider and changeup. Good CSW on that as well. You mentioned the ground ball rate. Like, that's a huge factor as well. I don't know. I really like everything in the profile. He's young. He's still developing into his own. I just think he's a really good arm, and I you can't say he's underrated. Everybody's in on him, but he seems like the type of arm that is a little underrated to an extent, where I think he could still take a huge step forward if the strikeouts tick up at least.
Yeah, he fits perfectly in that kind of like buy high. People don't like to buy high, but he's a guy that I would pay the price to get him because I think he's legit. I think he's going to be a back end fantasy ace for a while now. He's had a fly ball rate allowed under 17% each of his first three years. 12.4% fly ball rate last year. Ground ball rate was 62.2%. You know, he only gave up 9 home runs total. I think this is a guy that is going to be 180 innings, 200 strikeouts, good ratios. He's definitely there. I think he could be kind of fitting in like that range where like Julio Urias, Sandy Alcantara, guys that are like 8th to 12th in the rankings or so. I think he definitely could be that guy. You know, what they're doing out there in San Fran, there's something in the water with those pitchers. So love the organization he's in, love the ballpark he's in. Yeah, a lot to like here with Logan Webb. That's for sure. Moving on to the next guy here who is also in a great organization, Shane Boz. We've talked about Boz before, Chris, but I don't think we've really alluded to like how good Shane Boz can really be, where Shane Boz, I think, could be a top 10 fantasy arm. I think he's got that type of potential, especially now that he cut that walk rate drastically. It was under 3% in the minors, and it was 6.1%. It was just 3 starts, but look at 3 starts. He had a K minus walk rate of above 30%. Again, small sample size, but just shows like how good this guy can be when he's got all of his pitches working. The 4-seamer, slider, curveball, changeup, both breaking balls are, you know, 40%+ whiff pitches. The fastball averaged 97 miles an hour. Nobody can really square it up. I think this could be a top 10 arm. Do you agree with that? Or maybe you're not quite in that high? I don't know. Where are you at?
I think, yeah, it's possible. I mean, he kind of took the Robbie Ray route in the fact that he just pumps the ball in the zone more because his walk rates were horrific before year. Like, no one saw this jump coming. I mean, when you look at his full body of work before at each level, 13.3% walk rate, 11.1, 16.2%, and 10.8%. Then he goes to Double A in 2021, 1.7%. That's egregious, not going to happen again. But the 6.2% in Triple A and the 6.1% in the major leagues are kind of what you expect. And I mentioned the Robbie Ray route. He threw his four-seam for strikes 69.4% of the time. His slider thrown for strikes 69% of the time. Like, that's pretty significant when you're keeping the slider there. And the slider in the zone 55% of the time is good. And then when it's out of the zone, he has a 31% O-swing on that pitch. So a near 70% strike rate on that pitch is huge. Kept it on the ground. That's a big deal. Also, when you look at the curveball, not nearly as high, but he's still got good chase rates on it as well. I think if he develops the changeup, it could be a deadly four-pitch arsenal.
Absolutely agree there. I love Shane Boz. And yeah, the Rays might limit him a bit, but this is a guy that even at, even if he's only like 150, 160 inning guy, which I think is a fair range for his innings pitch moving forward, I think there could be elite ratio, elite strikeout. This could be like a guy that gets up in 35% K rate every year type of guy. He's that good with the arsenal we already talked about. So yeah, definitely think there's fantasy ace potential here. He could get up into that same range I was just talking about. Logan Webb, Sandy Alcantara, Julio Urias, Freddy Peralta, those types, be a top 10 arm. Love, love, love Shane Boz. Another rookie that I'm pretty high on and I keep moving steadily up my rankings every time I update them, whether it's redraft, dynasty, whatever, prospect, Joe Ryan. 5 games last year in the majors, 4.05 ERA, had 30% K rate even. xERA was 2.99. He's had great minor league success as well. Kind of an underrated guy, but he's got a really good fastball, even if it's only 91.2. It's a very effective fastball, and that showed in those 5 starts, 172 batting average against. Mixes in slider, changeup, and curveball. Again, none of them are like elite offerings, but all very good pitches. So this is a good 4-pitch mix, really good command and control profile as well. It's kind of like a sneaky guy that I think it's going to be maybe, I don't know if he's ever going to be, maybe SP2 is a little high, but I think he could be a good number 3 fantasy arm for a long time.
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair. And you mentioned the fastball. He uses it 66% of the time, only 91 mile an hour velo. Those really don't bode well, but when you locate it as well as he does,
yeah,
I mean, it's just pinpoint command on it. So that obviously played to a big benefit to him. He got a lot of called strikes on that pitch. Not, I mean, 11.4 swinging strike rate on that pitch is probably average for a four seam.
Yeah.
The called strike rate was 18.5% on it. So CSW on that pitch of 30% is really, really good. But then you mentioned slider, the changeup. They're solid pitches, and I think they're good enough to, you know, complement his arsenal where he uses the four seam so much. I think Ryan is still highly underrated. The biggest flaw in his game is just he's an extreme fly ball type pitcher.
Yeah, that is a slight concern for sure.
Yeah, so if things go south and he starts allowing hard contact, then that he could see that home run rate tick up. But other than that, everything looks really good. He just gets the job done consistently, considering the Arsenal's not really elite.
That's a great way to put it. Let's move on to – okay, let's go over to your boy here, Chris. Atlanta Brave, lefty, Max Fried. There was a good little discussion several days ago on Twitter regarding Max Fried, because I posted that I was the low man in our staff rankings. So I had him, I think I'm 26th in my rankings. A lot of people have him like 7. And I think this high was 17, some late high teens, low 20s. So I like Max Fried, but I wonder if, I don't know. I'm sure you'll differ on this. I think we differ a little bit on Fried, even though we both like Fried, but I don't know if he has that level in him to get up to like a high end SP2 where he's kind of being valued right now, because I don't know if there's a lot more upside on that K rate. It's around a league average K rate, maybe slightly above 23.7% last year. Very good arm, low ratios. Walk rate has been always pretty solid the last few years. After it was a bit higher earlier on in his career, but I think he's a very good like mid to back end SP2. But I wonder if he's getting a little overvalued. But what are your thoughts on Max Fried?
I do think that he could see the strikeout rate tick up, because I do think it has to be a choice, in my opinion. Because I think that he actually likes pitching to weak contact. And that's what he excels at. Like, he's really good at inducing weak contact and ground balls.
Yep.
From that standpoint, I mean, he has 60% ground ball rate on his four seam. Like, that's crazy high. And he's much like Joe Ryan in the sense where it's not a standout four seam. Yeah, he does average at least 94 miles an hour on it, but he also pinpoints it pretty well, gets a lot of called strikes with the pitch.
He does, yeah.
So I think that, honestly, he's pitching to contact to an extent with that pitch, getting a lot of ground balls. You know, you look at the other pitches, and his ground ball rate's much lower on the curveball and the slider, but he definitely can use those pitches to get swinging strikes, which is much better. He actually gets a lot of called strikes on the curveball, which I think is pretty significant. He drops it in the lower part of the zone. He gets people to chase as well. I'd almost like to see him use the curve and slider a little bit more. I think that'd be interesting. And obviously, if he did, we'd see the strikeout rate tick up. I think that's kind of natural to say. I say that, you know, but that's kind of the natural thing that would happen, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, I agree with that. At the same time, though, like, I just – the last time he had any single pitch with a whiff rate above 40% was 2018, which was a shortened year for him. He only threw, I don't know how many innings was it that year, 33. So, yeah, his last three full year, well, technically two full years, 2020 wasn't a full year, obviously. But, yeah, like I said, I think there's a chance he's a 25% K rate guy, 24-25%. His career best mark is 24-6 back in 2019. So I think there's a chance he's like, I don't know, like a Walker Buehler light, you know, but I just don't know if that K rate will ever get up to that range. Like, if he was like in his first, second year, maybe I could buy. I don't know. I would love to see him throw the curve and slider more. I agree with you there. But I just don't know how much more. Like, what do you think? You think there's a better chance for an uptick in Ks? Like, what range do you think it could get to? Do you think he could be a 27-28% K rate guy?
I think like a strikeout per inning. Like, I really think that he could, like, in my opinion, he can get to 200 innings and strike out 200 guys with a good ERA.
And that definitely helps because of the volume. Like, people kind of like to look at percentages and per inning basis, but like, the volume definitely helps. Like, we see it on both sides, hitting and pitching. You see guys like Lindor was always been a huge volume guy. I'm not saying he's bad, but you know, guys, that's part of a very underrated aspect of this, you know, game that we play, is the guys that accumulate stuff year in, year out, because they can stay on the field. Like, we've seen now more than ever, both especially for pitchers, how important that is, especially with the 200 inning guys dwindling by the year. So I definitely agree with you on that aspect. You definitely, the quality is obviously pretty good, but the quantity might even be better.
Yeah,
With Max Fried.
I mean, he did 192 between the regular and postseason last year, and that was with, you know, a little injury in the regular season. I think he blister, maybe. Can't remember exactly.
That sounds right.
Yeah, you know, if he threw 190 innings next year in the regular season with 190 Ks in a mid-threes ERA, I think that's extremely valuable.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's – so I don't think we're too far off in terms of, like, our expectations for him in terms of stats. But I think he's a mid-to-back-end SP2, but I just don't know if he's – like, people are kind of drafting him as a high-end SP2. I just don't know if he's quite there. Like I'm saying, I still really like Max Fried. Like, I think that kind of shows with what I've been saying about him here, but I just don't think he's quite that level. Like, I don't know if there's that next level. Like, I don't think he'd be like a sub-3 – ERA, 27% K rate, guys. Don't think that's there, but he's not too far off from that either. So it's still a very good arm. Absolutely. Moving over to a couple of White Sox here with Dylan Cease and Michael Kopech. They get a lot of intriguing arms on that roster, both in the bullpen and in the rotation. Kopech moving into the rotation this year, one of the most electric arms in baseball. And that shows with you watch him. It's easy to see. I was more upset about when we traded him and Yoan Moncada for Chris Sale, which obviously was a great deal, I think, for both sides, really. But I was more upset about us giving up Kopech than I was Moncada, who I was upset about. And I loved Moncada as well at the time. Obviously, he was like number one prospect at the time. But I really hated giving up Kopech. I'm like, man, this guy has the potential to be an absolute stud arm. The fastball velocity is elite, 97.3 last year. Obviously, it ticked up a little bit. He was mostly in the bullpen, but the year before that, 95.4, you know, elite fastball. And got the slider, curveball. He really only went to the slider last year. Curveball and changeup were sporadically mixed in, but he's got four good pitches, just kind of inconsistent with the curve and changeup. So still has some concern there. I want to see how the arsenal kind of rounds out as a starter, and if he can get that curveball and changeup, at least, you know, establish them, keep hitters off his elite four seam and slider combination. I think he could be a, you know, maybe 150 inning, but 200 plus K guy. I think he's gonna be an elite source of strikeout. So yeah, very, very intrigued by Kopech moving forward here.
Yeah. I think it just depends on the role, and you assume that he's going to be a starter, but I have no idea. Like, anything could happen here. He's competing for a rotation spot, so that's the quote from Rick Hahn. We'll see. That's my concern.
Like, who's he competing with? Like,
yeah,
who's the other guy? Like, whoever it is, I don't know who it is. I'd have to look. I don't even know if they've really indicated who the other person would be, but I could damn guarantee that they're not. They don't have as much talent as Michael Kopech does.
No. So I mean, they've got Lynn Giolito, Cease, Keuchel. Kopech in the fifth spot, Raylo in the longer leaf. He's definitely better than Ronaldo Lopez.
Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah, he's washed. But
he's so boring. But yeah, Kopech, you know, Kopech and Cease could both be, like, I can envision a future where in 2023 drafts, we're taking them both as top 15 arms. I think that's definitely a little bit easier to say that about Dylan Cease, because he's already shown some, you know, upside as a starter, obviously. But yeah, both these guys could be top 15 arms next year. I really believe that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Cease is definitely probably the biggest popular breakout candidate right now from a pitcher standpoint, and there's good reason for that. I think that, and there's plenty of reason to buy into Cease. He did a lot of good things, made a lot of good strides last year. He just still had those volatile outings that just really killed him. Like, if he can get that under control, then that would be huge. If he could just limit the damage, like not have a 7-run outing and you know, knock that down to 4 runs, goes such a long way for him.
Yeah, and I think I don't think the ratios aren't ever going to be elite, but I think they could be good. Like, what was he last year? He was 391 ERA, xERA 368, WHIP was 125. Let's say he gets down to, I think 3.5 ERA is fair for Dylan Cease. Maybe a WHIP 1.2, maybe 1.15, best case scenario. So good, but not great ratios. But the strike, like, he had 226 Ks last year, just 165 and 2/3 innings, 31.9% K rate overall, one of the top marks in the league. One of, I think it was only him and Corbin Burns that had three offerings with a 40%+ whiff rate. Like, he just misses bats. Such a high clip. Swing and strike rate is great. So, I think if he can just get the, I think you hit it on the head. Like, limit the blowups, limit the damage there, get the ERA and whip down a little bit. And like I said, 3.5, 1.15 ranges. I think he could be a top 15 arm. And I already have him ranked close to that. I think I have him ranked like 20th overall for 2022 and similarly in Dynasty. But I think there's definitely that next step. He could continue to rise here. And same with Kopech too. Great breakout potential for both these guys. Do you think, which one do you think's, you know, higher ranked in like 5 years, Cease or Kopech?
Probably Cease. I just think there's a better chance to be consistent there. I think Kopech has some volatility. So I'm leaning Cease.
All right, let's go for a pair of White Sox to a pair of Red Sox with Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock. I mean, our buddy David Mendelson, if he's listening right now, we're talking Cease and Tanner Houck. Like, those are his two, like, man crushes right now. So I'm sure Mendy's appreciating this talk. With Houck and Whitlock are, as a Red Sox fan, I love both these guys. Like, I think, honestly, I think these are our third and fourth best pitchers on the roster behind Chris Sale and Nathan Eovaldi. And I think they both have a chance to be better than Nathan Eovaldi, who I like a lot. 2022 is kind of a question mark with each of these two guys, because you thought that they would get bigger roles, whether that be, you know, a closer or moving into the rotation. And then the Red Sox go and sign a bunch of signed Michael Wacha, signed Rich Hill. And who's the other one? I'm blanking.
You already had Pivetta, Sale, and Eovaldi.
Maybe it was just those two.
Yeah, I think it was.
But yeah, it was two kind of head scratching signing. Like, I'm glad that we have depth now. But I don't know, is Rich Hill really depth? But his injury history is so great. So even if they're not in the rotation to start the year, like right now, roster resource has Houck as the sixth guy behind Hill and Wacha, the final two in the rotation, and then obviously Eovaldi, Sale, and Pivetta, the top three. They do have Whitlock as the closer, but there's been kind of rumblings that Matt Barnes will get another shot, which I don't agree with, but that's a story for another day. But Whitlock, I don't know if he's going to be a starter or a reliever long-term, but the stuff is there. Like, he showed last year how effective he can be. He's not a guy that has, like, elite, like any one elite pitch, but he's just so – it's got a really good arsenal all around. Can miss bats with a variety of pitches. So I think I want him to get a shot at starting, him and Tanner Houck, because Tanner Houck is, you know, a couple of slight adjustments away from being, he could be a top 20 arm. Like, he's that good. Like, he's gotten the right-handed Chris Sale comps for a reason, as the elite slider, the good sinking fastball. This needs to develop, whether he develops a splitter, you know, incorporates a changeup, whatever it is, cutter, who knows. He needs that third pitch. Like, he showed flashes of that splitter being a solid pitch, but that's all they were, flashes. It was very sporadically, but I guess Houck is the one that's rising more for me right now. Both are rising a good amount. Like, I just moved Whitlock up a ton as well, but I think Houck has a better chance of continuing to rise here. He has the higher upside, but yeah, definitely two arms I am trying to get all the shares I can right now in Dynasty Leagues.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I have hesitation about Houck for 2022. Like, I probably won't draft him anywhere for
For 2022, I won't. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but he's young enough to, you know, he'll get in the rotation in time. Are the Red Sox done it at starter? Like, I feel like they could still get somebody else. I don't know.
I want to say no, but I don't know. We might be.
I wouldn't feel good about going in the rotation with that, honestly, just knowing the injury risk with all these guys.
I don't feel great about it. They were kind of, Wacha was okay. It was low. It wasn't like either one. They didn't have, it wasn't a huge capital invested in either of these two guys, but Yeah, very weird. Like, you want to not give a chance to see what Hauk could do, but you want to get 76-year-old Rich Hill another shot. Like, he still can be effective. I'm not saying he can't be, but it was still a very weird signing. Waka, I was hoping he'd be like a depth guy, maybe be like that spot starter, long relief guy that kind of Martin Perez was the last few years. But yeah, I don't know. Those signings kind of was like, all right, you're kind of holding back Whitlock and Hauk here, but I don't know. Yeah. So for that reason, yeah, I'm not investing in Hauk in 2022. I would love to, but I just can't do it because of the uncertain role right now, at least to start the season. But long-term, I think there's, like I said, he's a couple adjustments away from being an absolute stud, I think.
Yeah, and I think he's one that should probably throw his slider more than the four-seam. Like, his slider's that elite. So I feel like when you throw your best pitch more often, like, there's only good results from there. So I'd love to see him throw that. I mean, the four seems good, but I'd really like to see him throw the slider more than that pitch personally. The only fear with the changeup, it doesn't have great velo separation from the four seam. So, you know, that may be an issue too. I mean, he throws the changeup 89 miles an hour. That's pretty hard when he's only 94 with the fastball. But yeah, I think the development of a third pitch will be huge for Hauk, as well as just use the slider more. Just throw your best pitch.
Yeah. I would love to see him. That slider is so damn filthy. You know, look at, he had a 191 X slug on that slider. It's like, that slider is such an elite pitch. Like, that's better than, you know, that's better than Rodon's slider. That's better than, you know, Kevin Gauss. You know, I'm asking, it's better than a lot of guys out there. So I love, it's one of the best sliders in baseball. That's what, let's put it that way. Yeah. And the fastball is still very good. Splitter, like you mentioned, it's a bit harder. What was the average on that? What was it? 85.8, which is, you know, it's not terrible, but yeah, he only threw it 7.4% of the time, and it had good results, like 0.59 batting average again. So obviously, it's a small sample size. It's got 36.8% whiff rate. So if he can establish that third pitch, and he technically does already have the three, so he has two different fastballs, but I want to see that changeup, you know, whether it's the splitter or a changeup, like I said, something that off-speed pitch to kind of, that he can use more against lefties. He doesn't have that right now. I don't know where, you know, he can use the slider. He uses the slider against lefties, but I don't know. I want another pitch into this mix here. But you look at some of the two names here, you know, similar pitches, pitchers to Tanner Houck based on velocity and movement on Baseball Savant. Two names are Joe Musgrove and Logan Webb. Like, he has that upside in him. Just, like I said, a couple of tweaks and he's there. One last name here. We'll end with John Gray before we get out of here. Been stuck in Colorado for, when did John Gray debut? When was his debut? It's been a
long time ago.
2013, 14. He's been stuck there for so long. He finally got out. Yes, he's 30 years old now. Rookie year 2015, but so 7 years stuck in Colorado purgatory. But he's definitely an intriguing guy moving forward. He's always had a pretty solid walk rate. You know, I think he's a guy that could be a top 50 guy moving forward. As he has a, you know, good, but he's slightly above average strikeout rate. I don't think he's going to be an elite there, but he limits the barrel percentage pretty well. You know, XBA last year was 236. Like, I think he's needed to get out of cores. I'm not saying he's going to be great or anything like that, but he's got two good breaking balls. Slider obviously used a lot more than the curveball, but getting out of cores is going to be a huge, huge thing. His home runs have been an issue for him for a long time. 21 home runs allowed last year in 149 innings. That's just not good. So getting into Texas now, more of a pitcher's park, I think that's a great move for John Gray value-wise.
Yep, I agree. I think he's going to be really, really good in away from Coors. I think there's a lot to like in the profile. He actually, shout out to Ryan Bloomfield, does the Bloom boards. John Gray had the biggest rise in K-minus BB rate from the first to second half last year.
I saw that, yeah.
10.8% to 19.8%. That's huge. Yeah, it'll be fun to see what he can do. The thing is with Gray, when you're in Coors, you have to pitch completely different. Like, the way Gray pitched as a professional was not the way he pitched prior to getting drafted. He was a completely different pitcher before getting drafted, but you have to change the way you pitch completely. Right. And then you have to pitch different on the road as well. Hopefully he'll just have to pitch one way in Texas and he'll be fine. I really think there's a lot of upside here. where he's going in drafts, I think you can get a good deal. I mean, his four seam gets a lot of called strikes, locates it pretty well, induces ground balls. The slider's a really good pitch as well. Last year he had a 19% swinging strike rate on the slider. That's really good. I'm sure the whiff rate was really high. If you have that up on Safon, I don't know, but
on a slider.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, let me get back. Where's the John Gray page? There
the CW on it was 35.5%. That's elite.
Yeah. And the whiff rate on the slider was 38.8 last year.
Okay. Almost 40%.
40.7 before a year before that, 40.9, I should say, 37 points. It's always been like right around 40%, give or take.
Yeah. That's the stuff is there. I really think just pitching differently outside of Coors is going to do wonders. So, yeah, I'm in on John Gray.
That's why nobody wants to go to Coors. they got to draft a bunch of pitchers and hopefully develop them, because nobody wants to go there for the exact reasons we just talked about. But that's a good one to end on. That's going to wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at EricCross04. Chris is at RotoClag, and our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. And check out all of our written work at Fantrax HQ or over on our Patreon. We're pumping out a lot of fun stuff there, so go check that out. And join us again next time for more fantasy baseball talk. But until then, everyone take care.
Privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out.
The pandemic has been hard on all our kids. New studies show more than one in three children who started school in the pandemic now need intensive reading help. That's right. Millions of kids in kindergarten through third grade in the United States cannot read at grade level. Here's the good news. Your child can be reading in just 30 days, guaranteed, with Hooked on Phonics. Even if your child has been struggling, Hooked on Phonics will teach your child to read in just 30 days, guaranteed. And right now, you can get started for just $1. Text the word GRADE to 323232 right now. Hooked on Phonics is highly effective and incredibly fun, and everything can be done right from home and in less than 20 minutes a day. For more than 30 years, Hooked on Phonics has been the proven learn-to-read program that kids love to use. Text GRADE to 323232 and teach your child to read in just 30 days, guaranteed. Text GRADE to 323232 right now and get started for just $1. Text GRADE to 323232 now. Text GRADE to 323232.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big.